Time once spent is gone. Energy once spent, we can replenish as long as we're doing the right things. So as leaders, do two things. One, how are you utilizing your energy and your time at the moment? And then the second, I think more powerful question is, how am I gaining energy and time? If we block out time for things that bring us energy and time to think, the strange thing happens. We gain more energy and more time to work on the things that really matter.
Welcome to the Business of Being Brilliant, where I explore the human side of work. I talk to business leaders, academics, authors, and other experts about what's helped them to work at their best and how we can create organisations where everyone can flourish. I'm your host, Helen Beedham, organisational expert, speaker, and award-winning author of the Amazon best-selling business book, The Future of Time. You'll find the show notes at helenbeedham.com, where you can also sign up for my insights into the latest work trends, plus some exclusive offers to help you flourish at work and home. Now, let's crack on with this week's episode. Hello and welcome to the podcast this week. It's a short working week as we've just had the first of the two bank holidays that bookend May in the UK. Sadly, Monday was a washout, but it's still lovely to have the extra day off nonetheless. But it got me thinking, and this week's podcast conversation got me thinking about what if you're in a role which really doesn't enable you to switch off, where you feel such intense work pressure that days off become incredibly rare. Hopefully that's not the situation for most of us, although I know many of us will find points in our lives where we're juggling really intense workloads alongside home responsibilities. But leaders of big organisations in particular come under really difficult pressure to cope with immense workloads and demands on their time. And one such CEO was in the news recently. Noel Quinn, who's CEO of the global bank HSBC, announced he was stepping down after 5 years in the role because it's been so intense and because he wants a better balance between his personal life and his work life. So we're going to be diving into this question of how on earth do you manage your time and energy when you're in a leadership role? And my guest has tons of wisdom and personal experience about this. And as we were speaking together, I realised that so much of his advice is applicable to anyone in their work lives, whether you're in a leadership role or not. And I certainly took a lot of reminders and good advice away with me that I've been reflecting on since we recorded the session, thinking about better ways to set boundaries, to pay attention to my energy levels, and to make sure that one way or another, I'm keeping my work life sustainable. I hope you find the conversation helpful and useful to you too, whether you're in a leadership position or not. And if you're worrying about a leader who you do work for or with, then feel free to share this episode with them. Hope you enjoy it. Have a listen. Today's conversation is all about leaders, the pressures they face, and how they can manage their outsized agendas while staying fit physically and mentally for the task. Whilst leaders might be able to call on more resources to deliver their agenda, they do face constant competing demands on their time, and they don't get any more hours in the day or week than you or I. So how can leaders take on this challenge and thrive? My guest this week, Mark Bateman, works with leaders worldwide, helping them to disrupt the status quo, transform outcomes, and leave an enduring legacy. Mark has led organisations himself and is currently CEO of WeQual, championing gender equality in corporate leadership roles. He's also the author of Disruptive Leadership, Using Fire to Drive Purposeful Change, published by Rethink Press in January this year. Welcome to the Business of Being Brilliant, Mark.
Thank you so much, Helen. Pleasure.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show, and I thoroughly recommend your book. I just found it utterly absorbing from start to finish, and the wonderful blend of your professional expertise around leadership and well-being and burnout, but also your personal stories as well. So looking forward to digging in to some of that over the next half hour with you.
Wonderful, thank you.
Yeah, and how did you feel when you finished writing and launching the book? Did you feel a bit burnt out by the process?
Oh, yes. So anybody who's written a book, I think, will be able to tell you that the journey that they've been on to get that book written. I originally wrote it actually pre-COVID. That was my first draft. And it was once I was full into the CEO of WeQual, which I've been almost 4 years now, where my business partner, Katie Litchfield, said, "Mark, you told me you've got a book, you've got to get it out." And I said, "I can't, we don't have time. I don't have time, there's still more to do." And so it really finishing the book was like the extra bit that comes on the end of the extra bit, you know? And there was a period at the end of last year where I thought, gosh, I just can't do this. But I knew I had to, otherwise the book would never get out. So when the book finally came out, it was a relief, I have to say.
Yeah.
The result of many years of labor.
Well, I'm impressed that you not just wrote it, but were able to come back to it after a pause and finish it off and get it out there. I've spoken to quite a few people who have written a draft book and it sat on their shelves for ages.
They said it was sat on a virtual shelf gathering digital dust for years. So yes.
Yeah. Well done. I hope you're enjoying hearing about how it's landing with people.
It is a genuine joy, and it's a strange thing because once you put it's really a work of art, right? I say it's my heart on a page. So the moment that goes out, you're no longer in control of it. It gains a life of its own. And when I hear from people who I don't know, through LinkedIn or what have you, they give me something positive. Of course, you know, that's why I wrote the book. So
yeah, it's super rewarding, isn't it? And I know you share lots of wisdom and ask some really, really thoughtful questions in your book. And we'll get into some of those during the conversation. But thinking about the topic of being a leader in today's world of work, we have leaders hitting the headlines for all sorts of reasons, good reasons, bad reasons. We have such a cult of the hero leader, haven't we, at the moment?
True.
As a leader yourself, but also from all the conversations you have with other leaders, how would you describe what's expected of leaders today?
You know, I was thinking about this question and what might have changed over the last, say, 20 years. And I think social media has actually ratcheted up the pressure on leaders. And the reason for that being is that, number one, we get to see the world's top leaders, or at least the ones that we perceive to be super successful. They appear on our phone screens every day. We hear these amazing quotes, the memes, like, okay, this sets the bar in terms of what we believe all leaders should be like. And I think the second aspect of that is the whole world of psychology, popular psychology, has also exploded in all of our Insta reels and Facebook reels and YouTube shorts, etc. And so all the time we are hearing ultimately what perfection is and really how we as leaders should be turning up almost every single day. And of course, the reality is we're all as human as each other. And so I do think that the expectation on leaders, as in the lived experience of employees that report into managers or leaders, that expectation has increased. And I think equally it has increased actually on ourselves as leaders, because we see this constant bar. We hear from Elon Musk every single day, who's like changing the world in six completely unique, novel ways. These are one-off, and yet somehow we compare ourselves to these really well-known leaders.
Yeah, I think that's so true about social media bringing leaders into our own homes, right? You know, I'll be having breakfast and reading about some CEO's morning routine. 10 years ago, probably have had to wade through a few business papers to find that story.
Exactly.
So you're right, it does bring us much closer to those personalities and high profile people. And I guess what you're saying is that has a knock-on impact for anyone leading an organization around.
It does, but also the expectations on those that are following leaders as well, right?
Yeah. Yes. And your book's about disruptive leadership. So can you explain what you mean by a disruptive leader for anyone that's not so familiar
with that? My definition of disruptive is something that successfully challenges the status quo, right? And that can either be positive or negative. And I think sometimes there's this negative connotation around the word disruption or disruptive, but actually anything that challenges the way things are is disruptive in nature. And so I believe that every single one of us, whether we're in leadership or otherwise, we want to drive an impact. We want to leave some positive legacy at the end of our lives. Well, that invariably means that we have to challenge the status quo. We have to expend some effort in gaining the outcomes that we really want. Well, that is disruptive, because if you weren't disruptive, you'd be very passive and you wouldn't be trying to influence outcomes in any way. So really the very essence of the book in terms of disruptive leadership is that each one of us envisages a better future in some way, or a different future. And in the pursuit of that future, the pursuit of that difference, we have to challenge the status quo. So by definition, we become disruptive.
Okay, that's super helpful, because I was wondering if you were reserving that label for people who are really challenging their industry in some way, or trying to, a bit like, you know, Musk, clearly very well known as being a great disruptive leader, trying to do something that's not been done before. But actually what you're saying is really any leader,
anybody
has to be a disruptive
leader.
Anybody who
sets out to do anything, yeah. The moment you're trying to change something, the moment that you are pursuing some difference that you want to make, and it can be in the life of your children or in your classroom, it can be as a nurse, it can be as a doctor. Ultimately, within the world of business, we're talking about driving impact, trying to achieve some outcome, some set of agreed objectives. You have to challenge the status quo actually every single day to achieve that. Otherwise, you never will.
Yeah. And making change happen, taking people, I guess, away from what's known and familiar and in their comfort zone. And by people, I mean your employees, but potentially, I guess, your clients and partners as well. I know from my background in kind of change management consulting and culture change, how hard it is.
Exactly.
We can spout all the business case that we want, but to really get people thinking and feeling and acting differently requires quite an emotional shift as well as a mindset shift. So what challenges does that present to a leader? On top of everything else they're dealing with, they have to be really good at taking people through change. What does that require of them?
So for me, I think the crux of taking people on a journey is understanding why we're taking the journey to start with. And very much my underlying philosophy, pretty much in any of the work that I do, is to really understand purpose. Why are you trying to do what you're trying to do? And it can be at a micro level or a macro level. I love taking the perspective of the entirety of our lives or the entirety of an organization's life, because it forces us to think about the really big things that we're trying to change. It takes a much longer term view as well. And so if we're trying to every single day drive disruption or change within our cultures, within our organizations, but why are we? What's at the heart of that? And you talk about the logical, rational head aspect of that and the heart emotive aspect of that. For me, a really good purpose statement, which you can look at as a vision or a mission statement, is that it appeals to both. It's cognitive and emotive, right? It appeals to the head and it appeals to the heart. And the moment I, as a follower, buy into you as my manager or you as my leader, the change, the positive change that you're trying to change in the world, I buy into that mission. And so therefore, I'm more likely to engage in change because I'm more willing to sacrifice something in the pursuit of that vision.
Yes, that makes sense. And actually, coincidentally, this morning, I caught sight of an article about how individuals or workers are more likely to accept lower pay if they are engaged in really purposeful, meaningful work. So actually, that tells you where it sits in the order of things in terms of how important that is to people.
For sure. You know, I did a master's in leadership coaching and mentoring, and my dissertation, my research project was on the subject of engagement. And what I found is that one of the really key things that actually drives engagement, and it bears out what you just said, is the alignment in terms of purpose. So if I'm part of a broader purpose that also aligns with my own personal purpose, I'm far more likely to give of my all in that pursuit than if you have a sense of purpose and I feel no connection with it whatsoever. So if you're trying to remove oil from the world, right? But actually, I love my petrol car and I think it's just greenwashing. We're at odds. I'm not going to give my all to you, really, no matter how much you pay. So that alignment on purpose, personal purpose and organizational purpose is really important.
Yes, that's so true. And it's reminding me, I've been speaking to some people who left an organization, and one of them was saying they really enjoyed the work that they were doing in their previous employer, but actually they feel a much greater affinity and belief in the purpose of their new employer, who are on this really not just ambitious, but impactful, I guess, ambition that's going to really change the world positively. So, yeah.
And who doesn't want to be caught up in something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? If you have a choice, I mean, I know some of us are driven by money, for example, and we're driven by money for a variety of different reasons, but that runs out at some point. And so I think midlife crises happen because we've potentially been chasing the wrong thing. We've been chasing the status or the safety. We've been trying to prove our parents wrong or our teachers wrong, or we're trying to right a wrong from our childhood. But you reach a stage where you go, hey, do you know what? I've got enough money now. What's the purpose of my life?
Yeah.
And I've coached so many bankers who have made so much money, but they feel they've left their soul behind. And I don't mean to speak negatively of banks. That's not what I mean. But those who have pursued almost status and money and power, at some point they get to a point, yeah, but what's left here? And I really want to give now back in some way. I want to drive a positive impact. So yeah, absolutely.
Mm. And you used the phrase a little bit earlier about giving our all.
Yeah.
And I imagine that must be a really difficult tightrope for a leader to walk down, right? Because they're trying encourage everyone to give their all.
Isn't
they are clearly giving their all to the point that, as we know, many leaders feel burnt out. And as you just described, that it's all about work. There's nothing left in their day or week for something meaningful outside of work. So how do they think about, I guess, their time, and what are the things they struggle with?
I think I'd argue there's two types of leader, certainly in my experience and all of my coaching, all the leaders I've worked with, there's almost two types of leader. There is that very purposeful, mission-led type leader. And then there is the leader who, at least in their mind, they may feel that they've got to where they've got to almost by accident. It's just as a result of putting one step in front of the other, and they find themselves with actually extraordinary levels of responsibility because of their capability. I think it's true in both cases that both of those two sets of leaders, and it's a scale, right? It probably sits somewhere in between as well, but both they work extraordinarily hard, and it is always a challenge for anybody in any position of responsibility where the pressure is on to maintain any semblance of work-life balance. We all strive for it. We all know that it's important. We know how important well-being is, but certainly working with the world's most senior leaders, they work long hours. There's no doubt about it. And I think there's always a greater risk for those that truly are mission-based, where the work, the mission, takes over everything about them. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly something that I personally have had to both wrestle with and continually check myself on, because I so believe in what I do, and I'm so driven by the impact that I want to leave on this planet. I have to keep checking in with myself not to burn myself out in that process. So
yeah.
I think the only way for anybody in leadership is having awareness as to what's driving them, how many hours are they actually working, what is the impact not only on them and their families, but also on their followers, right? Those that look up to them, those that they have responsibility for. Because what might be okay even for one leader, they may have an incredibly strong, I mean, look at Elon Musk, and I don't actually like using him as an example, but here I am for the second time. He's been very public about the hours that he works. We cannot compare ourselves to him. He is, you know, one in 7 billion, right? The moment we try and compare ourselves with these other types of leaders, I think that is for sure a path to take if we want to burn out, because they are so rare, so rare. And we are not party to the same opportunities that they've had as a result of the lives that they've lived. We can't do that comparison piece. We can only be aware of who we are, what our limitations are, what is driving us, what's the impact on me personally, on my relationships, and on those that follow me.
Yeah, it's such a great point, because it's almost like that leader and leadership style and working hours obsession gets the spotlight, but to far lesser extent, the leaders that are taking a much more balanced view of their work life alongside their home life. It's not so newsworthy, so it doesn't hit the media so much.
No, and the vast majority of people, pretty much in any country, anywhere in the world, are employed by owner-led businesses. We don't really hear about them, right? They're the small to medium-sized organizations. They're not the ones that make the news. They're not the ones that are writing the books. They are desperately trying to stay afloat, keep the business running, pay their staff at the end of every single month whilst delivering an outstanding service or product to their customers. So we don't hear about that, but actually that's the reality. The reality is, oh, it's Friday night and I'm exhausted, right? But now I need to, and especially if you're a father or a mother of young children, oh, now I need to invest in my children. I've got all these activities planned over the weekend. I'm going to arrive back at work Monday morning exhausted, but I still believe in the mission. How do I balance those? You mentioned the word tightrope. I think it is a tightrope, and it's one that we're likely to fall off on a fairly regular basis. We might just be clinging on with our hands, and we have to pull ourselves back up again and figure out how do we get some balance again. And, you know, in terms of that word balance, what I found really interesting, I saw one of these GIFs, one of these little videos about what balance actually means. And it means continuously correcting between left and right, right? You're always in a state of falling. And so you're always having to rebalance yourself to make sure that you don't fall. There is no such thing as perfect balance because we're human. There's wind. there's changing circumstances. We're having to continuously reprioritize. It's just a constant ongoing process.
Yes, that's so much a better way of looking at it and thinking about it than putting it up there on a pedestal as a state you are going to achieve and then somehow amazingly hold on to.
Absolutely not possible, no.
Yeah. And let's talk about the falling off bit a bit more. Yes. So how do you know when you're burning out? And what happens if you ignore the signs? What happens to you and to those around you?
Well, I guess if I tell a story, it feels a bit safe to tell this particular story because it happened to me from about 2006, and I realized how burnt out I was 2008. And because there's some distance now, it gives me some safety to speak about it, but I don't want to say that I'm perfect because it's still something that I battle with today. But my first business, it was in the technology space. I was based in the Midlands in the UK. We had a lot of big clients in London and elsewhere around the globe. I would find myself getting in my car first thing in the morning, driving down to London because I couldn't rely on the train. In fact, I hated being out of control. I would much rather be sat in my car in a traffic jam, being on my phone with Bluetooth, than being out of control on a train going down to London. I would run a number of different business meetings throughout the day. The whole time I'm on the phone and then I drive back and I try and get back for about 8 o'clock, just in time for my girls who are going to bed to try and read them a goodnight story. And that wasn't every day by any means, but it was a lot of days. And the days that I was in the office, they were full on days, as anybody understands, you know, that entrepreneurial aspect of growing a business. And to begin with, I'd be reading a story to one of my girls and I'd fall asleep halfway through the story. And I'd get a nudge in the ribs, dad, wake up. I want to hear what happened to Bob or whatever it is, you know? And I remember people saying to me, Mark, you know, how do you do it? Like, how are you able to sustain this level of effort, of busyness? And it's constant, right? I didn't know what I was doing. It's my first business. I'm hiring. The business is doubling every single year. We're gaining all these blue chip clients. We're providing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week support, 5 minute response time for priority one issues. And then you've got sales and marketing and finance and HR, and you've got offices and legal contracts, and you're learning so much all the time, and you're learning how to hire, you're learning how to manage, you're learning how to grow. You're trying to make sure you don't drop the ball anywhere. Yeah, that was hard. And I'm like, well, I don't get stressed. And that was very much my mindset back then. I just thought that I was quite, not unique, but quite unique in the sense that I didn't suffer from stress in the same way as other people did, that I was able to carry an extraordinary load, which may actually be true, but each of us has a limit. Each of us has a breakpoint. And a number of things happened in our home life that meant I had to start splitting my time between what was happening in the home life and also what was happening in business, plus I'm traveling. Then the financial crash happened of 2008, just after we'd invested. We'd had an outstanding year, 2007. We invested most of the money back into the business within financial services, only for the big banks to suddenly say, well, no, we're not going to give you those orders, those multi-million pound year deal orders. And I found myself, if I ate something, I would feel like somebody had given me sleeping tablets. It would get to maybe mid-afternoon and I could barely keep my eyes open. It felt like every cell in my body was a million years old. And I still didn't realize, and I still was pushing through. And then it turns out I had irritable bowel syndrome. Well, I didn't know at the time, but actually IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, is actually a byproduct of stress and typically long-term stress as well. So all these things are building up, a sense of exhaustion, waking up in the morning and not feeling refreshed, feeling like I haven't actually slept. You start noticing that if you get injured, those injuries take longer to heal. You're probably going to start getting shorter with other people, right? Your resilience, your ability to almost be like a mushroom cloud, that if something hits it on one side, it gets absorbed. It doesn't really impact. That ability reduces, so that when something happens, it has almost a more immediate impact on your own ability or capability to deal with the pressure, with the stress, to make decisions. Gosh, I look back and I can see the negative impact of that state of burnout that I was already in, but not recognizing, in terms of my decision-making. Because I had to have difficult conversations with some of my team and I was putting them off because I didn't have the energy to really think it through and to have that conflict, because it's all ultimately it's conflict. So it got to a stage where I realized I couldn't continue. And so I said to my leadership team, I'm going to need to take 6 months out. And that's exactly what I did. And I went into therapy and I started studying therapy, psychotherapy, and I did the master's in leadership coaching. And in the end, actually, I took 3 years. And at the end of that 3 years, I sold the business. So that was quite a journey. And I had to figure out what had happened, why it had happened, what was it about me that contributed to that. I went through a process of, really increasing my own awareness as to my own drivers, my own motivations, what it was I was trying to achieve, what behaviors of mine were helpful, what was not. It was a process of deep self-reflection, personal growth, and came out quite a different man as a result.
Yeah, golly, well, thank you for sharing that story. It sounds an incredibly intense time of your life, both the gradual burnout, but then actually... Yeah. The reflecting, the stepping back, the change in direction, moving on to a different path sounded very meaningful. And when you were talking about how it's helpful if we have the resilience to be more like a mushroom cloud, which I love that image. I was also thinking at the same time, that makes sense because, right, it's spongy and it's got give. Whereas when we're really, and I noticed this about myself, when I am spreading myself too thin, not just at work, but actually with everything else around and at home and stuff as well, I feel brittle. Yes. Like someone pushes back and you might snap instead of not reacting in that way. Taking a moment to think and to notice and to listen and then respond in a different way. You don't have that ability when you're really drained.
And I use the analogy at this point of a battery. If you imagine a rechargeable battery, and typically when you look at a rechargeable battery, there might be a line that's around the 15, 20% mark. And so it goes from plus to minus. And when we are fully charged, right, we've slept well, we're well rested, and the demands of life hasn't drained us. We're in a good place. It may be after like a 2 week holiday or something. You feel charged and you're ready to go, right? You're motivated, you're excited. You can't wait to get stuck into challenges. And life feels quite good at that point. But what happens is then we expend energy. And so that the amount of energy that is in our own personal battery reduces. Now, as human beings, we are amazing. If we get the right amount of rest, and sleep is a really critical component of that. All these people that say, oh, well, the world's top leaders, they only sleep in 4 hours a day is utter rubbish. By the way, all the science is showing us you need minimum of 7 hours of sleep at night. Our bodies are like machines. We really need to regulate that we go to bed the same time every day and we wake up every day. And if we're night owls and we keep changing our sleeping patterns, likely we're experiencing chronic jet lag.
Oh, okay.
So we are experiencing chronic jet lag, and even a difference of 2 hours is enough to throw our systems out of sync, because our systems are really like machines. So as human beings, we're amazing that if we prioritize sleep, that we're enabling our batteries to recharge overnight in ways that we can't even fathom. But if we don't do that, over time, the amount of energy that we have every single day reduces until we get to that reserve line. Now we're in danger. that's when we're at the point of burnout. Because if we carry on going, and I think if we have any awareness of ourselves, we'll know. And even now, I know every single day, if I get to about 7 o'clock in the evening and I've done my 10 hours or whatever, it doesn't matter what the number is, I get to that point in the day and I go, right, I've just got to do this one more thing. Mm. And I can feel the drain. I get, I really don't want to do this. And it's not about discipline now, because that's like a whip that we can whip ourselves. It's not about discipline. It's about awareness. No, if I do this thing now, it's going to take me deeper into my reserve. That's not healthy. Because if I do that, I don't have what I need to function optimally in every other aspect of my life. And it's going to cost me tomorrow. And so having that awareness and being able to say, right, in this moment, it's a no. I'm going to prioritize my evening. I'm going to prioritize going to bed on time. And tomorrow morning, this can be the first thing that I start, is a far more healthy way of doing that.
Yes, I totally get that. And at the same time, I'm empathizing, because I mean, for me too, right? The little voice in my head says, when I tell it, no, I'm not going to finish that task tonight. It's going to wait till tomorrow. I'm going to prioritize sleep. That little voice comes right back at me saying, mm-hmm. yeah, but think of all the things you've got to do tomorrow, and you're adding true. Something into that. And it almost becomes a debate with yourself sometimes. So you've explained really clearly how important it is to prioritize our sleep habits, whether we're in leadership roles or just managing a lot of stuff at work and at home generally. What would be another piece of advice that people really pay attention to?
So, you know, very high level, summarizing thousands and thousands of coaching conversations, and the conversations I have in myself as well, right? I always say it's far easier to coach than do. Yeah. It's easier to coach a CEO than be a CEO. Is number one, always come back to that sense of purpose, right? We get so caught up in the detail. Kate sees me doing this, my business partner Kate, she says, Mark, you're in the rabbit warren. Right. If you imagine a rabbit warren, it's a tunnel of dark black holes that seem to have no ending and you get lost. It's like an underground maze. And we all recognize when we find ourselves in that place, right? It's like we can't see clearly anymore. It's hard to prioritize. We probably get caught up on something that feels way more important than it should be. And we know it, but we don't want to let on. So number one is take a step back. Well, how do we take a step back? The biggest advice I can give to anybody pretty much anywhere in life, but certainly in leadership, is every single week, make sure that you build time into your calendar during your work week. So I'm not talking about weekends and evenings, during your Monday to Friday, during your normal work hours, for time to think. And it feels counterintuitive. I don't have time. Mark, don't you understand? I don't have time. And I, within the book, I use this formula really, but I talk about energy and time, E plus T. And we all have a certain amount of energy. We all have, as you said in introduction, exactly the same amount of time every single day. Once we've used our time, we never get it back again, ever, right? And I'm now in my mid-50s. I'm recognizing how fast time is flying by and how important it is that I spend my time on the things that really matter to me. So time once spent is gone. Energy once spent, we can replenish as long as we're doing the right things. So as leaders, do two things. One, how are you utilizing your energy and your time at the moment? Have a look at your calendar. Look at the meetings. Look at how you're spending your time. How much of your time each week is being spent on those two or three really critical strategic objectives that you know is important for the success of achieving your vision or your mission? And if you're not sure what they are, the first thing you need to do is put some time in your diary to get really clear as to what they are. And they need to be two or three statements. If we are working on these three things, we're going to achieve the success that we want. So how am I expending or using my energy and time? And then the second, I think, more powerful question is, how am I gaining energy and time? What? How can I gain energy and time? The strangest thing is if we block out time for things that bring us energy and time to think, the strange thing happens. We gain more energy and more time to work on the things that really matter, because we're able to lose the dross, the stuff that really doesn't matter, the things that are eating away at us that are not important for what we're trying to achieve. So how do we gain energy? How do we gain time? Well, what are the things that you love? What brings inspiration? What brings joy? What feeds your soul? How many of those things are in your week? And then in terms of time to think, blocking out, and if you struggle how to do this, literally think, what is the most important project name in your business? Block out minimum 2 hours during your week. Call it that project name, because everybody thinks, oh yeah, you know, Bob, Sheila, they're working on that project. Change your location, go outside, go for a walk, get some sunlight, change it up, allow yourself to get into a more creative space to think or to reflect on, right, what is truly important here? And most of us don't spend enough time doing that. But if we do, that's where we can change the world.
Yeah, that's super powerful. Thank you for that really clear advice about those two things we can do. And it really resonates with me, because you talked about going down rabbit warrens. Yeah. I often think about disappearing down a well or being stuck in a tunnel. And our instinct is to just keep running faster. If we just keep doing more of what we're doing, somehow we'll magically get on top of stuff. And it's so counterintuitive to put the brakes on and climb out and say, no, I'm going to put it down. I'm going to go out for a walk, or I'm going to stop now and not pursue anything else work related later. It can take a huge effort to do that, but totally agree. At the times I've managed to do that, as you say, you get the perspective, you get a different take on it. You suddenly think, actually, I'm chasing that, and that's not that important. So really, really valuable advice. Thank you so much. And thoroughly recommend to listeners to get Mark's book, read it, pass it to your boss if you're worrying about them, or to your partner if you're worrying about them. But there's loads of great reflective questions in there. Mark's very kindly just shared a few with us on the conversation today. So Mark, if people are interested to find out more about you and the work you do, what's the best way for them to do that?
Thank you. So I'm relatively active on LinkedIn, so definitely follow me on LinkedIn. I have a personal website called mark-bateman.com. As the CEO of WeQual, we're primarily working with big corporate organizations driving gender equality at that mid-management and executive level. You can find out more information there at WeQual.com, and also find WeQual on LinkedIn as well. But personally, connect with me on LinkedIn. Feel free to send me a message if you've heard this. I'd love to hear your feedback. If you do go and buy the book, thank you. And again, I'd love to hear your feedback. I do say it really is my heart on a page. And just hearing, it can just be a sentence saying, I read this, I found this interesting, challenging, supportive, whatever it was. I so appreciate that.
Great. Thank you. Well, there you go, everyone. There's an invitation to get in touch with Mark and let him know what has resonated for you from this conversation or from his book. And I will put links to all those places that you mentioned in the show notes. But thank you so much for talking to us about your own experiences of being a leader and responding to burnout, and also sharing your wisdom on how we, whether we're in a leadership role in an organization or just juggling a whole load of stuff in our own work and home lives, how we can be more attentive to our time and our energy, noticing when they're really draining, and what to prioritize to help us thrive in our work and home lives. Thank you so much. You've been a brilliant guest.
My pleasure, Helen. A real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, please rate the podcast online, leave a review, and share it with friends. And if you like to watch as well as listen, don't forget the videos are also on my YouTube channel. See you next Monday. Have a great week, and keep on learning.